Welcome to the Upshot subscriber bonus segment. Thanks so much for being a subscriber. He's Jamie, I'm Charlie. And today we are talking about whether or not disc golf is recession-proof. And perhaps we're going to end up in a little bit of a test case here in the next year or two. You know, it's hard to know exactly what's going to happen with the U.S. economy, the global economy. Things are not good right now. I think that much is clear. Unemployment very high, people losing their jobs right and left, companies downsizing, hiring freezes. It's not good. I mean, the hope, I guess, is that we can get back to normal in 3 months, 6 months, something like that. But I don't know that that's necessarily how things work. You know, you can't just stop. I saw somebody compare the economy to the human body. And it's like, if you just stop the blood flowing through the human body for a while, it tends to not go well. Like, you can't just like then start pumping the blood again and everything's fine. So anyway, that's a topic for a different podcast and another show. But I want to get into this idea of, is disc golf recession proof? And people have been saying this. We heard this from Jeremy Rusko on last week's show. Yeah, I think he straight up said that disc golf is recession proof. There's an article from a week ago quoting Jeremy Rusko where he says that disc golf is recession proof. There is an article from 2008 with Discraft founder Jim Kenner, and he says disc golf is recession proof. It's in a Detroit Business Journal. There are a lot of examples of people in the disc golf business, not even necessarily players, but people who are actually like selling the products that say that the sport is recession proof. And I think it's easy to see why that would be a suggestion. Let's think about it, right? It's often free to play. You don't have to pay to play at a course. You only need a relatively small initial investment in order to be able to play. Now, if you want to get serious about it, maybe you end up spending thousands of dollars on discs, but the average person who just wants to get started can buy a starter pack for $25 or $30 and they can play. And they can carry their discs with them. They don't need a bag. They don't need anything. You just have your three discs and you go. That means that, if you lose your job and you can't go to the movies and you can't go out to restaurants and you can't play in the basketball league that costs, $250 to sign up, you can still play disc golf. So what do you make of that, Jamie? Do you think that that's, I'm making the sort of the bull case here for disc golf being a sport that will thrive even in bad times?
I think it's pretty solid. And I mean, on the one hand, we're just kind of repeating the same tropes that we always talk about when we talk about hashtag grow the sport or the growth of the sport. We always talk about what three things. We talk about that it's cheap. We talk about that the learning curve is not as steep as other sports and generally that the atmosphere is relaxed. And then we also talk about that the fact that kind of along the lines of equipment being cheap, that courses are mostly free. Those are just the three things that get repeated all the time when you want to sell the sport. But I do think that there's some truth to that, and it does lead to this idea of being recession proof. When I came up in the film industry, everybody always said entertainment was recession proof. That was sort of the big self-perpetuating thing in the industry, that our industry will always exist because people always need entertainment. So I thought it was funny that you brought up movie theaters as one of the examples. But I think the biggest question about whether it's recession proof is, yes, it's recession proof to play, but if you're not building courses at the same rate that you're getting new players, then eventually you're going to create something that theoretically is less recession proof, right? Because if you have increased demand and you have decreased supply of courses, thinking about some courses are not back in the ground yet, et cetera, et cetera. Some people are still under more strict orders to stay at home. then eventually you may have a case where it becomes like golf. You have a segment of the population that wants to build their own space to play. You start paying money. The courses start becoming nicer. You get this two-tier differentiation. So I think, yes, it's recession-proof, but there's a couple strings attached at the same time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people forget how much of disc golf right now is volunteer-driven. And that goes from course maintenance to tournament operations to, I mean, there's a lot of volunteer stuff happening at the very highest levels at majors. People spotting, that's all volunteer work. And, you know, long-term, you're not going to be able to continue to do that. And I think that you're going to see the proliferation of pay-to-play courses. It's not like disc golf courses take care of themselves. Somebody has to clear debris. Somebody has to decide whether to leave a tree up or cut it down. And the best courses are well-maintained by somebody. And that's usually by club members who take the time to volunteer their time to do that. And you know, as the sport continues to grow, I do think you're going to see it trend more towards the golf model. Now, I don't think that we're ever going to have, you know, disc golf country clubs with $25,000 initiation fees or something like that. But I do think you're going to see more courses that cost money to play. And, you know, if you want to be serious about growing, you need to find ways to get courses into urban spaces. And, you know, Jamie, we've talked about this before. You know, San Francisco may be a bit of an outlier, but like New York, there's nowhere around here. When I'm at the park, people say, oh, that's cool. It looks like you're throwing disc golf discs. Where can I play around here? And I'm like, well, you can drive 40 minutes to one of these three places. And that's going to limit the appeal in urban settings. And guess what? A lot of people live in urban settings. So now you could also argue that New York is an outlier in this case, the density that this city has. But, you know, it's not necessarily, I guess what I would say is this. Disc golf may be relatively recession proof, but it's also a little bit growth capped right now. You're not going to get the same kind of rapid growth that might be possible if you're not putting in that, you know, infrastructure that is going to be required, as you just mentioned, Jamie. So I think it's there's some factors back and forth there. It's not like we're near that saturation point that, you know, we can't get more people playing without building, you know, another 50% more courses than we already have. But, you know, if disc golf continues to grow, you're going to have to start grappling with some of those trickier issues, which we've mostly been able to ignore as a sport for now.
Right. One of the biggest things that we've always said about disc golf, I feel, is that we're able to make these sweeping generalizations about our sport because we have not traditionally had to deal as much with supply and demand issues. Yes, there's a lot more courses now, but even when there were fewer courses, even as 10 years ago, I mean, the number of courses in the last 10 years, I'm pretty sure it's nearly doubled in the world. I don't have stats on hand, but if I recall correctly, it's roughly. You had people that would drive 40 minutes, right? Or you had people that would go distances, and they had, I guess, the level of expectation is lower. And the more people you get into the sport, the more expectations there's going to be, especially if we start throwing labels on it like recession proof. That means people are going to expect to be able to play for cheap, play nearby in their local community, and have a generally shared experience. Like my experience at this local course is not drastically that much different than yours. Obviously, there's still the outlier courses and the ones you travel to and all that, but just in general. I think, however, we are getting to the point in this sport where even with the number of courses that we have, we're still introducing so many people to this game. And like Rusko has said, and like Yussi said, more and more people are getting into this game. stores are still seeing an uptick in sales, and people are going to flood the courses to come back out, which on the one hand is kind of going to defeat the argument that it's a great social distancing sport, which I believe that argument. I buy that argument. But I also recognize that, okay, if this many people are buying Frisbees right now and they can't play, and if we open up in a phased manner, this is going to cause a lot of crowding at courses. So I don't know. I don't guess I don't have like a super concrete point of what I'm saying there, but the thought that I'm trying to get at, Charlie, is that it's recession-proof, but that also takes into account some legacy data. It doesn't necessarily take into account the trajectory we're on, because we could evolve out of that moniker.
Yeah. I'm going to be curious to see what happens here. I mean, you know, are we going to see... I want to talk to manufacturers again in like a year and say, what has happened to your... You know, we're hearing multiple people talking about, you know, their e-commerce sales going up. UC said this is the most sales he's ever seen in a 7-day period. Jeremy Rusko said they've seen 2 to 4 times as many sales online as they usually do, and we're seeing a lot of sales of starter packs and that kind of thing. Is this a persistent thing, or is this a, you know, disc golf is being mentioned as an option for people to do right now, and there's not that many other activities that people can take part in? Because there's plenty of sports that are pretty cheap and you would consider recession-proof. I mean, swimming, tennis... I wouldn't put golf in this category because of green fees being relatively expensive. Running, I mean, there's a lot. And even if you just stick to individual sports. So, like, what I guess if you're in the disc golf business, you're not really worried about the business cycle affecting your direct disc sales necessarily. But as the sport grows, there are things that the business cycle are going to affect. Think about it. Right now, you have city and state governments paying out tons of money in unemployment benefits, having a tax base dropping because people are losing their jobs. And you know, if home prices, if we get a weakness in the real estate market, we're going to see property taxes falling. And so there's going to be huge budget shortfalls. And what does that mean? Well, if you were planning to say, hey, city, we want to build this course, you know, we need $25,000 to install a course at the local park, that might be gone. And that is an impact that you have to consider. You know, there's a lot of things that come into whether disc golf is, you know, growing. Players deciding that they want to go play is one of those elements. But, you know, the development of the sport, tournaments, courses, those things are being impacted and could be impacted through the business cycle of, you know, recessions in the future as well. If it means that you're seeing slowing down of, you know, companies building out a new factory or a warehouse, or the new course is getting put in the ground. So it's something to think about. You know, it's not just about whether people can go out and play, because I do think that that is not necessarily going to be connected to whether people are, you know, doing well financially or not. And but there are many elements of the sport that are connected to that.
Yeah, it's such a good point that you brought up there. You have to still build the courses. And you have to, that means in most cases, to keep it inside of the box that we want to sell it. That means we have to keep it cheap and free. That means we have to work with parks departments. That means you have to convince them that it's a good time to continue to expand. Because exactly like you led off with, you can't just put a pause button on the growth, right? It's not just the pro tour that's been affected. It's not just touring pros and manufacturers. They are going to be more recession-proof than your local shop. They are going to be more recession-proof than your local scene who, okay, you're in a town that just got your course 2 years ago, first 18-hole basket course, and now you're trying to get some nines put in or a school course, or like you're trying to take that next step to go from a fledgling area where people come and play to a fully forged disc golf community inside of a city or metropolitan area. So I think it's really important to draw that distinction, and I'm glad you did. I'll tell you what the one thing I'd be doing right now, if I was a basket manufacturer, I would be finding a way to link up with scientists, link up with your materials providers, find a way to market to parks departments that coronavirus does not stay on targets, on baskets. Because I think right now there's a lot of confusion out there, and there's a lot of confusion about a lot of aspects of this virus because, frankly, we just don't know that much right now. And many conclusions, and I'm not making any specific comment one way or another, I'm just saying that many conclusions that are being drawn are ahead of the actual data that we can say that we 100% know. Like, from a scientific standpoint, say that we know something. Some of those will be proven right anyway because you can predict it. Some of them won't. But if I was a disc golf manufacturer and I had skin in this game, I would be spinning up the literature to send to parks departments, government officials, health organizations, everything. I would find a way to get my hands on anything I could that says that, hey, this there's not a risk. You know, it's not the same thing as being in a closed space. Because if you're proven to be right, you will have the marketing advantage for your basket getting into courses going forward. And that's going to be the big thing. Continue to build the courses so we continue, like UC said, to grow from the ground up.
And you know, to be clear, I am extremely bullish right now on the future of disc golf. I think things are going really well. And I think, you know, you look at the news from golf and it's grim. Courses are closing. Courses are financially failing. I mean, how many courses are going to get wrecked by the coronavirus situation? I think many, because a lot of them were already hurting. It's expensive. It takes too long to play. It's harder than disc golf. And the thing is, like, the concept of golf is something that people are always going to want to do. I'm not saying that golf is going to die, but as like a culturally like really important part of the world and, you know, of society, I think we could see it start to wane. I mean, it has. The data are very clear about this. And disc golf can absolutely fill that. I think disc golf could become basically a mainstream sport. And when I say mainstream, I don't necessarily mean that it's going to end up, you know, getting broadcasted on ESPN and whatnot, maybe sometime far in the future. But I just think there's so many advantages to the disc golf experience compared to golf. And I've played both many times. And it's faster to play. It's easier to introduce new people to it. It's less expensive. It's far less of a hassle. Typically, if you don't live in New York City, it's easy to get to a course. There's so many good things about disc golf. It's just straight up easier to learn how to do it. You know, I have some friends who play Ultimate who love to play disc golf, and they just play with an Ultrastar. And I'm trying to convince them to play with real discs.
Like such dorks.
But it's Sarah. I played a Ultrastar only round with a friend who's doing this down in North Carolina. And I was awful because I couldn't, like, it took me like 9 holes to get used to throwing the Ultrastar and like getting it to do what I want. Right. Because like the switch between Ultimate and disc golf is so stark. Like the way you throw the disc is just very different. It is accessible. Like if you just have any Frisbee period, you can go play disc golf. You don't have to, you know, learn about all the details of overstability and understability and hyzer flip and all this stuff. You can just go throw the Frisbee at the chains. And it's just so much more accessible than golf, where the equipment needs are so much higher. It's extremely discouraging, even if you're like been playing for a while. So I just think that like long-term, disc golf's in such a good position to keep growing at this rapid pace. And that really is irrespective of what's going on in the economy.
Yeah, I think it's no surprise that I'd agree with you. I think disc golf is going in a good direction. You know, hopefully, I try to tell myself that I see some of the numbers and that I, you know, am at least somewhat connected to people that really see like the financial numbers of the sport. And if they're pretty happy and not just, you know, spinning you in circles, because it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm trying to guard against the fact that I've been in the sport for a while. And so eventually you take everything as a positive and you're like, oh yeah, this is a great thing. We're 5 more years away. We're 5 more years away because we've been hearing that forever. But I do generally feel like we're going in a good direction. And I agree. I think one thing that's going to be interesting to look at as we start to open up again, we need to continue to look at the crippling of golf. It has been on its way down for a number of years now. Since the beginning of this past decade, the 2010s, there were articles about the demise of golf. And I can tell you from like the very first days sitting in with the disc golf park crew that has been a target that said, look, there's an opportunity here. And I just wonder how much this pandemic is going to be a catalyst for that, because, you know, somebody out there, some parks department out there, some business owner out there may take this risk. They may read that article that says, hey, this is recession proof, and they may go get a golf course, you know, kind of like buying a car at a police auction. You know, the golf course can't operate, so you just go buy that property for pennies on the dollar, and you don't have to set up the maintenance cost and the same level of infrastructure as a golf course. So you may just kind of move into a new shell and create something out there. And I'm really interested to see what happens out of that, because it's, I mean, frankly, look, we've talked around this issue a lot in different ways, but the Pro Tour is going to be better served. I think there is a segment of the market, as we become more and more mainstream, that is going to be okay with paying for the experience of playing at a course that has a bar or doesn't take 5 hours to play because you have, you know, you're spacing out your tee times properly and getting people through the course because it was designed that way, et cetera, et cetera. Because even if we don't get mainstream popular, I agree with you, Charlie. I think we are becoming more mainstream. You still talk to people these days and they've heard of disc golf. And that wasn't the case just a few years ago.
You look at the numbers. This is from an article from the PDGA in early February. And, you know, who knows? This year's PDGA is probably going to get dinged. I mean, I think using membership growth for the PDGA from 2020 as a proxy for what's happening in the sport is probably going to be not the right move, just because so many people are going to miss out on events and not sign up for memberships because they're not playing in an event or something because of the coronavirus. So set aside 2020, but let's look at 2019. 15% membership growth. That's up over 2018 and 2017, which were both over 10%. You've got 35% club growth for like PDGA affiliated clubs. There were new national events sanctioned by the PDGA in Malaysia, Mexico, Singapore, Vietnam, and Zambia for the first time ever. You know, there are so many things that point to the sport just exploding right now. I mean, 15% growth may not sound like that much, but that's massive. And that's in an environment where a lot of sports are declining in their participation rates. Youth sports have been declining. I think, you know, an area where disc golf needs to get better, and we've discussed it many times before on the podcast, is in getting kids into the game. But I think, you know, probably golf struggles with that a little bit too. And there's ways to mitigate that. Like introducing the Frisbee is a good start. You know, like kids playing with a Frisbee, throwing, playing catch, playing ultimate. Those are things that can eventually lead people to playing disc golf. Mm-hmm. And so I feel good about the overall like disc golf market and like where things are headed. And I agree completely, by the way, Jamie, you know, the rise of pay to play courses and, you know, tournament directors doing it full time as their life. Like these are good things. We want to see money starting to come into the sport because that's what's going to open up bigger, longer term growth.
Yeah. You just sent me down a thought hole with talking about non or just starting with a frisbee and playing catch. And it just, in this instant, I asked the question, why has a disc golf company not come out with a catch mold? Every catch mold that I've ever seen is modeled after, well, it's either a cheap piece of junk frisbee, right? That you just like,
yeah, corporate, if you're corporate into giveaway.
Yeah, if you're into disc sports of any kind, you're not going to throw that disc unless it is literally the only thing you can put your hands on and the plates are too overstable in your kitchen or something. Like, but there is room, I think, for a disc golf company to introduce a throw and catch disc that flies more like a disc golf disc. Like, why do the catch discs have to fly like ultimate discs? These are the things that I hope some of these companies are like taking this time to figure out, because if you start to teach kids, and you know, it's a bit soft, lightweight, something great for the family, but you teach kids how to manipulate their wrist and the body motion to make something that flies more like a neutral golf disc instead of something that just so naturally hyzer flips with an extreme way, then I think you're going to start to see more people getting into disc golf at the recreational level. And I think it'll allow people to up their skills if they want to get on that PDGA membership growth column.
You know, even more important, making smaller discs for kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean catch discs specifically. I mean, you know, maybe even thinking about doing this for disc golf discs, but they're obviously already smaller, so you can get lighter weight ones and that's probably appropriate. But for like a catch disc, you know, for a long time, even little kids are playing with Ultra Stars and they're just giant discs for small hands. Now they have the J-Star, which is a smaller version of the Ultra Star, and it's got more flexibility in the plastic, so it doesn't hurt you if it hits your hands. And you know, as far as I know, Discraft's the only company that's making something like that, because they're trying to serve the ultimate market. But the you know, the idea of having like smaller kid style just throw and catch discs makes sense. The other thing, and again calling back, now I'm forgetting which guest said it. Was it Rusko that we need like short par 3 9 hole courses?
He may have said that. I've heard UC say that as well. So
I know we had somebody on just within a couple of weeks. I'm pretty sure it was Jeremy, and yeah, he said we need to have short 9 hole courses. And you think about it, like if you're going to get kids playing, that's going to be crucial, because if you're going to be serious about trying to get, 7-year-olds out playing disc golf, they cannot be playing Maple Hill Golds.
No.
I'm using an extreme example, obviously, but you need to have some like super beginner friendly, easy pitch and putt courses, which by the way are fun for adults too. And that's going to be a crucial next step for like expanding the sport, because you can't have every course being decided like, let's make this one really hard through the woods. And like, even though those might be the best courses for more experienced players, you need simple, easy courses to be friendly, just the same way you need beginner discs.
Yes. If you want to keep it recession proof, you have to keep it to where, I guess if you want to take it from like a 30,000 foot view, you have to keep it commitment light, right? Because some people, the comeback to like, okay, play Maple Hill Golds. Oh, Maple Hill has 4 tees or 5 tees or however many, you know, different tees they have. And yes, I think a great course has multiple sets of tees. And for me personally, I'm a multiple tee guy. I'm not a multiple basket guy. I like multiple pin positions, but I don't like the courses where you have 2 baskets in at one time. I think that's terrible and it looks stupid. So multiple tees, great. But you still have to keep the commitment light. You have to make it so that even if you want to go out and play Maple Hill, whatever the shorts are, I don't know if it's like golf where it's like white or red, usually the shorter colors. It still takes time to traverse that property. It still takes a decent amount more skill to manipulate the disc to go through those fairways.
And it's just a long course.
Right.
Like, to go from the basket to the red tee is going to be quite a walk in some cases.
Right, because you're still laying out for the gold.
Right.
So you're still walking and spending that much time in your day. And if you have kids, they may not have the attention span, et cetera, et cetera. So it's such a good point. You've got to create courses and experiences that are commitment light so that you can bring the young ones, so that you can, you know, bring your dog, bring your pet, and you don't have to be out there that long. So it just doesn't interfere as much.
Shout out to Blendon Woods in Ohio. The best par three course I've ever played. It's basically the perfect beginner course.
What makes this course perfect? I've never heard of this course.
It's very compact. So, you know, basket to next tee is 10-second walk. I don't think you could really lose a disc there. I mean, maybe, but it's not like dense woods or anything. There's hole variety, but every hole is tubable, and there's plenty of ace run holes, and they're all sub 300 feet. And it's just fun. It's not, you know, it's not too boring. It's not just like every hole is straight shot. You have dog leg left, dog leg right. You have, you have blind shots off the tee sometimes, but it's still like you would definitely call it a beginner friendly, easy course. And it's awesome. If you ever get a chance, I think it's outside of Cleveland or maybe, no, it's outside of Columbus.
Okay.
9 holes. Oh, no, sorry, it's 18. Half the holes are under 200 feet and the other half are under 300 feet.
But it's interesting that you said 9 because that means it feels like 9. It feels like the commitment level, to harp this point again, of a 9-hole course, even though you get 18 out of it.
Yep.
So I think that's where you got to be.
And I think you can easily play it as a 9-hole because I think the 9th basket is back at the beginning.
Love the loops. If you're building a course, this isn't really on topic. I don't know if we're still on topic from how we started, but I like the talk. If you're building a course and you can build 9-hole loops, build 9-hole loops. Like, seriously, a free course design tip. I don't have that many designs under my belt, but I've learned from some people who are very, very good. Build 9-hole loops, especially if you're selling it to a parks department, especially if you're one of those people that's going to hear this, go out and sell it to a golf course, 9-hole loops. You got to buy another beer before the 10th hole. You lost your driver in the pond. You got to go get it replaced. You need interaction points with your points of sale. And if you can get a golfer twice in a round or three times in a round, you know, front, middle, and end versus just front and end, 9-hole loops. That's crucial.
All right. Well, I'm not sure. We definitely didn't end where we started, but that's okay. I think it's a good time to be thinking about, like, you know, what's the next phase of the sport, and lots of things to consider as we continue to try to bring the game to new people. Thanks so much for tuning in to our subscriber only bonus segment. For Jamie, I'm Charlie, saying so long, and we'll talk to you next week.
Enhance.